What happens when death gets in the way of a contract? It's a pretty dark thought, right? But it's also at the center of a really interesting legal case involving the late actor, River Phoenix.
It really is. This case, CNA International Reinsurance Covey Phoenix, from Florida back in 96, it really gets into this idea of impossibility of performance in contract law. And death, you see, well, it brings up some unique questions about ongoing obligations.
So, can you set the stage for us a little? What happened with River Phoenix in these contracts?
Sure. Well, River Phoenix, as you might know, died tragically back in 93 from a drive overdose. And, he was right in the middle of filming two movies at the time, Dark Blood and Interview with a Vampire.
Right, yeah. It was a huge loss for both the film industry and his fans, of course. But how did all this lead to a legal battle?
Well, because his death obviously threw those productions into, complete chaos. Dark Blood was never finished, and Interview with a Vampire, well, they had to scramble and complete it with another actor.
Ah, so that's where the insurance companies come in.
Exactly. CNA International Reinsurance and American Casualty, they had issued policies covering those films, and they ended up paying millions to the studios to cover the disruptions caused by Phoenix's death, and naturally, they wanted to get some of that money back.
Okay, so they went after Phoenix's estate then, and I guess this is where the impossibility of performance idea comes into play.
Yep, you got it. The insurers, they sued Phoenix's estate, for a breach of contract, arguing that his death prevented him from fulfilling his ACOV obligations. And their argument basically was that because Phoenix's death was, the result of his own actions, that drug overdose, his estate, well, they said his estate should be liable for the financial fallout.
Wow. That's a pretty tough stance to take. So what did the courts have to say about all this?
Well, the initial trial court actually sided with Phoenix's estate. They applied the concept of impossibility to the situation, concluding that Phoenix's death made it objectively impossible for him to fulfill the contract. So, his estate wasn't liable. And they also said that the insurance policies, well, they weren't active at the time of his death.
So case closed. I'm gonna guess not so fast. This wouldn't be much of a deep dive if it ended there.
You're right about that, Dr. Twist. The appellate court actually partially overturned that trial court decision.
Wait, so they said death wasn't enough to void the contracts?
No, they upheld the impossibility of performance defense. They agreed that death, regardless of the cause, voids personal service contracts. But here's the thing, the catch. They found that the trial court, well, they'd made a mistake about the insurance policy dates. It turned out the policies were actually active before Phoenix's death.
Wow. Talk about a legal curveball. So the case was far from over then. What happened next?
Well, the appellate court, they sent the case back down to the trial court, for them to reconsider everything with those correct policy dates. But they also did something else kind of interesting. They left the door open for the insurance companies to possibly revisit a fraud claim.
A fraud claim. Oh, tell me more about that.
So one of the insurers, CNA, they accused Phoenix of fraud. They claim that he, lied on a medical certificate about his drug use. Now, the appellate court, they didn't dismiss this claim completely. They said the trial court needed to figure out the exact effective dates of those insurance policies before they could, properly assess the fraud claim.
Okay, so we've got ourselves a bit of a legal cliffhanger then. Before we get into all that, though, I think it would be helpful to, kind of zoom out for a second. What are the big takeaways from all this? What should our listeners be thinking about?
Absolutely. This case offers some great practical lessons for lawyers. First, you really got to think about potential risks when you're drafting contracts, It's super important to spell out what happens, the consequences, if specific events occur. Like, for instance, death resulting in drug use. Don't leave any room for ambiguity.
That makes perfect sense. So it's all about anticipating potential problems, right? And defining obligations and risks really clear.
Yeah, exactly. And the second big takeaway is that, generally speaking, death dissolves personal service contracts. This case really reinforces that principle that someone's estate isn't typically liable for fulfilling contracts that were based on the deceased person's unique skills or, abilities.
So, like, if someone was hired to, I don't know, paint a mural and they died before finishing, their family wouldn't have to step in and complete it.
That's the general idea. Yep. And then finally, this whole case really emphasizes the importance of clear and accurate policy dates. Like, even a small error, it can have massive legal and financial ramifications.
These are really important points. And it sounds like this case has implications that go way beyond just, Hollywood contracts. But before we explore those, I'm kind of curious to hear more about the legal reasoning behind the appellate court's decision, especially that, that impossibility of performance concept.
You're right. This case really gets into some pretty fundamental contract law principles, you know, particularly this whole idea of impossibility of performance. The appellate court, they specifically referenced the restatement of contracts, sections 261 and 262, which, you know, address this very issue.
I'm familiar with the restatement, but could you break that down for our listeners who might not be, you know, some people might not be as well-versed in contract law as we are?
Sure. So basically, these sections, they establish that death, while it makes it impossible to carry out contracts for, you know, personal services, it's based on the understanding that these types of contracts, they rely on a specific individual's unique skills and abilities. And when that person dies, those skills, those abilities, well, they're gone, obviously, making the performance of the contract, you know, objectively impossible.
Makes sense. But what I find interesting is that the court didn't seem to really consider the fact that Phoenix's death was, in a sense, caused by his own actions, right? Why didn't they factor that in?
That's a great question. And the court was really deliberate in their reasoning there. They wanted to establish a clear and consistent legal standard for, you know, for these types of cases. And if they started digging into, like, subjective judgments about the circumstances of someone's death, especially in contract cases, well, it would create a real legal mess.
Yeah, I can definitely see how that would be a slippery slope, trying to figure out fault in every contract dispute where someone has died. I mean, that would be unbelievably complicated.
Exactly. So the court, they basically drew a line, death is death, right? It terminates a personal service contract, period. And they made it clear that if insurance companies, well, if they want to protect themselves against specific risks, like, you know, death resulting from drug use or something, they need to write those exclusions directly into their policies.
So it's all about clarity and precision in drafting those contracts then.
Absolutely. Now, shifting gears a little bit, let's go back to that fraud claim, the one related to the medical certificate. You remember where we left off?
Yeah. The appellate court dismissed it, but they didn't completely, you know, shut the door on it. They basically sent it back to the trial court to sort out those insurance policy dates before making a final decision.
Exactly. So it was a partial victory for Phoenix's estate, but, you know, that fraud claim, well, it could come back. Depending on what the trial court found about those policy dates, it really, you know, it just highlights how important it is to get those details right.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely underscores the idea that even a seemingly small detail can have, you know, huge implications in a legal case. This case also, it got me thinking about how this idea of impossibility might apply to more everyday situations. Like, what if you have a freelance graphic designer, right? And they die suddenly before they finish a project for a client. What happens then?
That's a great example. And it brings up another important distinction in, you know, contract law, the difference between impossibility and impracticability.
Okay, yeah, I've heard those terms before, but could you explain the difference? I feel like there's some nuance there that's worth exploring.
Okay, yeah, I'm all ears. Break down impossibility versus impracticability for us. Okay, so impossibility, like we saw in the River Phoenix case, it means it's, you know, objectively impossible to actually fulfill the terms of a contract. Death, in that case, well, that's a pretty clear-cut example. Impracticability, though, it's a little different. It means that performing the contract, well, it's not technically impossible, but it would be super difficult or expensive, you know, because of some unforeseen event.
So, like, if, if a hurricane came and wiped out a factory where, you know, somebody's supposed to be manufacturing a product, would that be impossibility?
That's a really good example. It gets right to the heart of it. Yeah, the courts, I would look at whether, you know, rebuilding the factory or manufacturing the product somewhere else, they'd look at if that was even, you know, feasible or not. They'd weigh the costs and all the practicalities before deciding if performance was, you know, truly impossible.
So it's not just about, you know, someone saying, well, this is really hard now, so I'm not going to do it. There's a higher legal bar they have to clear.
Exactly. The courts, they look at the difference between, you know, objective impossibility, where it's literally, physically, or legally impossible, and then there's subjective impracticability, where, you know, it might be tough or costly, but not actually impossible.
Okay, that makes sense. So back to the freelance graphic designer. Let's say, you know, they had a contract to design a website, but they died before finishing it. Sounds like impossibility to me. I mean, they can't finish it from the grave, right?
Right. That definitely leans toward impossibility, especially if the contract was really for, you know, for their specific creative vision and their skills. But what if, you know, what if they had already finished like 80% of the website?
Yeah, that changes things a bit. Could the client argue that, you know, finishing that last 20%, that it's not impossible?
Exactly. And that's where things get tricky. It might actually become more of an impracticability issue. Maybe finding another designer, you know, one who could perfectly match that original style and vision. Maybe that's basically impossible. But finding someone to just finish the basic, you know, functionality of the website, well, maybe that's not. These cases can get really, really specific.
Well, this it really shows how important it is to have, you know, good contracts from the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. And it shows why, you know, why you need a skilled lawyer who can analyze these situations, understand the case law, and really, you know, advocate for their clients.
Well, we've covered a lot today, from Hollywood to hurricanes. What are some final thoughts for our listeners?
You know, the River Phoenix case, it might seem like a pretty unique situation, but the principles of, you know, impossibility and impracticability, these apply to contracts in, well, just about every field. So I'd encourage our listeners to think about this. How might these concepts actually come into play in your own practice areas? What are some, you know, some steps you can take to make sure that your clients' contracts are clear, comprehensive, and that they protect their interests no matter what happens, right?
Yeah, that's a great point to end on. It's all about being proactive and prepared. Thanks so much for taking the time to guide us through this deep dive today. It's been really, really interesting.
Of course, my pleasure. I always enjoy a good legal puzzle.
And to our listeners, thanks for joining us on the deep dive. We'll be back next time with another interesting case. But until then, keep exploring, keep learning, and as always, stay curious.